back. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Anna Mateo and John Russell. Jill Robbins answers a question from an English learner who asks, "How can I continue a conversation in English?" We close our show with an American story. This week it is The Ambitious Guest. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
When it comes to English language nature programs, perhaps the world's most well-known voice is David Attenborough.
There is only one planet in the universe, as far as we know, where there is life.
I've been very lucky.
Sir David Attenborough, as he is known in his native Britain, is a major television star. But he is also a tireless explorer and world traveler. Attenborough has visited many countries and has presented many animals from across the planet. He has been explaining the natural world to TV audiences since the 1950s. Like many of us, Attenborough has been in his house for much of 2020 because of the coronavirus pandemic. He has only left his home twice to have his teeth worked on. But that does not mean this lifelong lover of the outdoors has been cut off from nature. He told the Associated Press that he has been able to enjoy the natural world in his garden in a new way.
I've seen the world go by in the natural world in my garden with a continuity and intensity that I haven't been able to give it for almost forever, really.
Attenborough has also found ways to keep working. He is the voice of a new BBC and Discovery series called A Perfect Planet. It will air in early January. Even at age 94, the famous TV presenter's voice has not lost its most well-known qualities: warmth, calm, and curiosity. Making the documentary series during the pandemic, however, required a high level of creativity, technology, and a lot of blankets. With blankets hanging off his walls, Attenborough was able to record from his home in West London. Blanketing the walls helps to deaden unwanted sounds. A technical setup permitted Attenborough to watch the video while his producer, Alastair Fothergill, advised him from over 160 kilometers away in Bristol. A microphone wire went out the window. This way, his voice could be recorded by a crew member in the garden. A small outdoor building was built to make recordings in the winter. But in the summer, Attenborough said, the crew member was sitting out in the rain, and he was listening to what I was saying and recording it. This was not the only remote-controlled success on the series. The music used for the program was also recorded at great distance. The head of music production is Ilan Ishkari. He was able to stay in Britain while directing an orchestra in Iceland. That orchestra was used, Fothergill said, because Iceland was not under heavy antivirus restrictions. It's been challenging, Father Gill admits. But I think that the final product is absolutely up to the really high standards we set ourselves. The series is a celebration of why Earth is such the ideal environment for many different kinds of animals to live and coexist. The show was shot in 31 countries over 4 years. The video includes river turtles laying eggs in the Amazon's sandbars, brown bears fishing for salmon in Russia, and gibbons swinging from the trees in Southeast Asia's tropical forests. Different parts of the series look at important parts of nature. These include the sun, the ocean, volcanoes, weather events, and, of course, humans. Everything Attenborough does looks at how current climate change is greatly affecting our world. He also gives suggestions for what people can do, as well as what they should stop doing, to help save the planet. As for nature being healing during the pandemic, Attenborough knows it comes at a high cost. He told the Associated Press, "People are dying by the thousands. Let's not minimize it." It should cause the rest of us, the survivors, as it were, to pull ourselves together and see that we can act together. He added that we all can think of solutions and find ways to use them. It is a message, he says, he believes people are listening to. If the human race is to survive without major catastrophes, he warns, now is the time to do so. I'm Ana Mateo.
U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, recently said it is issuing long-awaited rules that permit small drones to fly at night and over people. Drones, a kind of small aircraft, fly without a pilot. The FAA's move is an important step toward the use of drones for large numbers of business deliveries in the United States. The FAA is also requiring identification of most drones for security and safety reasons. FAA Administrator Steve Dixon said in a statement that the new rules get us closer to the day when we will more routinely see drone operations, such as the delivery of packages. Packages are boxes or large envelopes that are sent or delivered. Since the beginning of the coronavirus crisis, companies have raced to create drone fleets to speed deliveries. Delivery companies like UPS and Amazon have been investing in the technology for years. Both companies have seen growing profits during the coronavirus pandemic as more Americans turn to home delivery for many products, including groceries. The rules also come at a time when drones represent the fastest growing area in the transportation sector, an FAA press release statement said. The statement added that there are over 1.7 million drone registrations and 203,000 FAA-approved remote pilots in the United States. For night operations, the FAA said drones must have special lights that help the aircraft avoid accidents. Remote ID, a form of identification, is required for all drones weighing around 250 grams or more. But it is required for smaller drones in some situations. The remote ID rule requires drones to broadcast ID messages via radio. The FAA's new rules are the latest in a series of policies about drone use for deliveries. In October 2019, United Parcel Service Incorporated said that it won the U.S. government's first full approval to operate a drone airline. Last year, Alphabet's Wing, a sister company of search engine Google, was the first to get U.S. air carrier approval for a single-pilot drone operation. In August, Amazon's drone service received federal approval. The approval lets the company begin testing business deliveries through its drone fleet. The new FAA rules will become official 60 days after publication next month. Drone manufacturers will have 18 months to begin producing drones with remote ID, while drone operators have an additional year to begin using drones with remote ID. I'm John Russell.
This week, we answer a question from a VOA listener who writes, I work with some native speakers of English. I want to practice speaking with them, so I improve my English. But sometimes I get nervous, so our conversation ends quickly. How can I talk with these friends for a longer time? VOA fan. Dear VOA fan, you are right. It is not always easy to keep a conversation going in English. You might not be sure about what to say. Or maybe you are afraid that your pronunciation is not good. First, remember the importance of listening. Listen to the other person carefully so that you can ask a follow-up question. For example, let's say the other person tells you,
I just got back from a trip to Canada.
You can follow up with a question using who, what, where, when, why, or how. Where did you go in Canada? What was your favorite place there? How was the food there? If you want to keep a conversation going, it's a good idea to ask questions that cannot be answered with a simple yes or no. If the other person asks you a yes or no question, try to give a longer answer to help keep the conversation going. For example, a friend might ask,
Hey, have you seen the new Star Wars movie?
You could just answer, No, I haven't, or you could say more. You could answer, No, but I plan to see it soon. How about you? Do not worry about your pronunciation. If your pronunciation is a little different, the other person will still understand your message if you try speaking slowly and clearly. When you are traveling in an English-speaking country and have some free time, be brave and speak in English with someone who does not look too busy. You may make a new friend. Do you have a question for the teacher? We want to hear from you. Please understand that we cannot answer all of the questions our listeners send us. Write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called The Ambitious Guest. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Harry Monroe with our story.
One December night, a long, long time ago, a family sat around the fireplace in their home. A golden light from the fire filled the room. The mother and father laughed at something their oldest daughter had just said. The girl was 17, much older than her little brother and sister, who were only 5 and 6 years old. A very old woman, the family's grandmother, sat knitting in the warmest corner of the room. And a baby, the youngest child, smiled at the fire's light from its tiny bed. This family had found happiness in the worst place in all of New England. They had built their home high up in the White Mountains, where the wind blows violently all year long. The family lived in an especially cold and dangerous spot. Stones from the top of the mountain above their house would often roll down the mountainside and wake them in the middle of the night. No other family lived near them on the mountain. But this family was never lonely. They enjoyed each other's company and often had visitors. Their house was built near an important road that connected the White Mountains to the St. Lawrence River. People traveling through the mountains in wagons always stopped at the family's door for a drink of water and a friendly word. Lonely travelers crossing the mountains on foot would step into the house to share a hot meal. Sometimes the wind became so wild and cold that these strangers would spend the night with the family. The family offered every traveler who stopped at their home a kindness that money could not buy. On that December evening, the wind came rushing down the mountain. It seemed to stop at their house to knock at the door before it roared down into the valley. The family fell silent for a moment. But then they realized that someone really was knocking at their door. The oldest girl opened the door and found a young man standing in the dark. The old grandmother put a chair near the fireplace for him. The oldest daughter gave him a warm, shy smile, and the baby held up its little arms to him. "This fire is just what I needed," the young man said. "The wind has been blowing in my face for the last 2 hours." The father took the young man's travel bag. "Are you going to Vermont?" the older man asked. "Yes, to Burlington," the traveler replied. "I wanted to reach the valley tonight, but when I saw the light in your window, I decided to stop. I would like to sit and enjoy your fire and your company for a while." As the young man took his place by the fire, something like heavy footsteps was heard outside. It sounded as if someone was running down the side of the mountain, taking enormous steps. The father looked out one of the windows. "That old mountain has thrown another stone at us again. He must have been afraid we would forget him. He sometimes shakes his head and makes us think he will come down on top of us," the father explained to the young man. "But we are old neighbors," he smiled, "and we manage to get along together pretty well. Besides, I have made a safe hiding place outside to protect us in case a slide brings the mountain down on our heads." As the father spoke, the mother prepared a hot meal for their guest. While he ate, he talked freely to the family, as if it were his own. This young man did not trust people easily. Yet on this evening, something made him share his deepest secret with these simple mountain people. The young man's secret was that he was ambitious. He did not know what he wanted to do with his life yet, but he did know that he did not want to be forgotten after he had died. He believed that sometime during his life he would become famous and be admired by thousands of people. "So far," the young man said, "I have done nothing. If I disappeared tomorrow from the face of the earth, no one would know anything about me. No one would ask, 'Who was he? Where did he go?' But I cannot die until I have reached my destiny. Then let death come. I will have built my monument." The young man's powerful emotions touched the family. They smiled. "You laugh at me," the young man said, taking the oldest daughter's hand. "You think my ambition is silly." She was very shy, and her face became pink with embarrassment. "It is better to sit here by the fire," she whispered, "and be happy even if nobody thinks of us." Her father stared into the fire. "I think there is something natural in what the young man says, and his words have made me think about our lives here. It would have been nice if we had had a little farm down in the valley. Some place where we could see our mountains without being afraid they would fall on our heads. I would have been respected by all our neighbors. And when I had grown old, I would die happy in my bed. You would put a stone over my grave so everyone would know I lived an honest life. You see, the young man cried out, it is in our nature to want a monument. Some want only a stone on their grave. Others want to be a part of everyone's memory. But we all want to be remembered after we die. The young man threw some more wood on the fire to chase away the darkness. The firelight fell on the little group around the fireplace, the father's strong arms, and the mother's gentle smile. It touched the young man's proud face and the daughter's shy one. It warmed the old grandmother, still knitting in the corner. She looked up from her knitting, and with her fingers still moving the needles, she said, old people have their secrets, just as young people do. The old woman said she had made her funeral clothes some years earlier. They were the finest clothes she had made since her wedding dress. She said her secret was a fear that she would not be buried in her best clothes. The young man stared into the fire. Old and young, he said, we dream of graves and monuments. I wonder how sailors feel when their ship is sinking and they know they will be buried in the wide and nameless grave that is the ocean. A sound rising like the roar of the ocean shook the house. Young and old exchanged one wild look. Then the same words burst from all their lips. The slide! The slide! They rushed away from the house, into the darkness, to the secret spot the father had built to protect them from the mountain slide. The whole side of the mountain came rushing toward the house like a waterfall of destruction. But just before it reached the little house, the wave of earth divided in two and went around the family's home. Everyone and everything in the path of the terrible slide was destroyed, except the little house. The next morning, smoke was seen coming from the chimney of the house on the mountain. Inside, the fire was still burning. The chairs were still drawn up in a half circle around the fireplace. It looked as if the family had just gone out for a walk. Some people thought that a stranger had been with the family on that terrible night, but no one ever discovered who the stranger was. His name and way of life remain a mystery. His body was never found.
You have just heard the story, The Ambitious Guest. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne and adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis. Your narrator was Harry Monroe.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.